The Attack Zone, Season 3, Episode 1, Tournament Preparation. Hello, Dice fans. It's a new year, and so you've stepped into Season 3 of The Attack Zone. And although it's a new season, we are still bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. I am Dave, and joining me on the line once again is semi-professional Spider-Punk cosplayer Randy. What is up, sir? Is your Spider-Man cosplay, Spider-Punk cosplay, meeting expectations?
I haven't had any complaints so far. I think it's going well. Actually, I haven't used it since last spring. The next Comic-Con, Wizard World Cleveland, rolling around in a couple months. Might wear it to that, might not. Got a few other costume ideas with the family, so we'll see.
Let me ask this, now that there is a new Romig running around, well, not running yet, not really doing a whole lot on their own at all, in fact, other than probably crying and pooping.
Yeah.
Now that there is a new Romig, do you have a new, like, family costume idea that would incorporate the full number?
Well, every year we kind of go as a group. I think this year we're going to be the Avengers, and so we just all will pick random Avengers and go as that, since... There are five kids and two adults now. We keep needing to pick larger and larger groups.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. And that laugh you just heard was from our resident Incredible Hulk, not cosplayer, but actually impersonator, JT.
I break all the things.
You sure do. Yeah, how's it going, JT? What's up?
Pretty good. Man, we're already halfway through January. It's hard to believe. This time just flies, you know. I mean, we're work is pretty seasonally heavy in the hospital. We do a lot of surgeries, so people will wait until they have their deductible met to have elective surgery, and then they try and schedule it and realize that the doctors are booked a couple months out because everyone's doing the same thing. And so then they'll say, okay, well, I'll meet my deductible first thing of the year then with surgery, and you know the rest of the year I've already met it. So we stay pretty busy until first or second week of February. Yeah, so fourth quarter through, you know, first five or six weeks of the year is just kind of bananas, really.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be. We've been pretty busy at work as well, and then, of course, around here, just continuing to do things around the house. We just marked actually a year since we moved in. We closed a little, like right around Christmas last year, but we actually moved in around the Martin Luther King holiday, and of course, that's right now as we're recording this. So, yeah, been a year in our place, and that's pretty crazy. And already the unexpected expenses happened when we needed to buy a new water heater, but what are you going to do? That's just owning a house, I guess. We had a Dice Masters event today up at the store. We did Hybrid Constructed with Green Arrow Flash and Deadpool. So that's sort of, you know, instead of just doing it from one set or from everything like other places have done before, we just picked those two sets and said bring four and whatever basic actions and max three dice each. And then we'll open 10 packs as a sealed and you'll fill out the other four of your team. So I opened Super Rare Deadman on the other four, or as one of my other four characters, and was already planning on going with some rare Firestorm direct damage, and boy did Deadman play into that. He was an all-star, and some pretty good games today, but I came away with the wins for our Speedsters OP Hybrid Constructed event. So that was some fun.
So you won the event by pulling Deadman, but did you also win the event by winning out?
Oh yeah, I won out, absolutely. Yeah, Deadman did a lot of work for me, but even if I hadn't have pulled him, I had a healthy amount of energy types represented on my team. I already had Super Rare Zatanna that I was going to use there too. So yeah, even absent that pool, he just did some chip damage and made the wins come a little bit quicker. Because my opponents were still using globals because they felt they needed to. It was really Firestorm that shut the door. That card is just so good. Especially all versions of Firestorm on that set, but I especially love the rare and the common. So, yeah, it's a fun day with Dice Masters, and then, of course, the Green Bay Packers won today, which is pretty great, and the Steelers are currently playing, so I am taking the hit, the sacrifice, and chilling out here with you guys, recording the Attack Zone, while the Pittsburgh Steelers do battle with the Kansas City Chiefs. Though, truth be told, I'm not, like, the biggest football fan in the world, so whatever. It's a more social thing anymore.
Yeah, you know? Get together with friends and... Yep, I understand.
Exactly. So, we are not going to be talking about football, though, which I am sure is, hopefully, is something that everybody's cool with, because we are a Dice Masters show. So we are going to get into our six-pack here. Before we do that, I certainly want to remind everybody, if you like the show, please give us a review wherever you heard us. And if there's somewhere you've done a review that we wouldn't know about, like, obviously, we know about the iTunes, the podcast app and all that kind of thing. We don't know about everything, so share it with us somehow. Let us know, because we want to give you props here. Reviews are how other people are going to find us. We don't advertise. We just kind of rely on word of mouth and hopefully semi-okay search engine optimization. So we want to give you props for a review here. Semi-okay. We none of us are learned in those things. We just try hard. So there's that. And so let's see what the six-pack... And we'll hopefully have some new foils and rares to give away to our lucky January winner when we hit the end of the month. We already had three cards in there from January's first show. So let's see what we have here. Today, guys, I have Deadpool for us. It's been a couple weeks since we hit up a six-pack from Deadpool. And gotta love looking for those foils, those rares, and what the heck we would draft with this anyway. People are certainly going to be thinking about this with PDC store championships for draft coming up in late February, early March, as they decide what sets are we going to pick to draft from for that event since Batman got pushed back. So hopefully we can try to add to that conversation. All right, you guys ready for a six-pack?
Dave, I am so ready.
All right. Yeah, Randy, it's been a couple weeks for you, I believe. So
yeah, that
shake off the rust,
sir. That new baby thing. Got in the way of recording a couple of times.
Yeah, that's a doozy. Yeah. You know, you got to tell that baby what's what, man.
Dude, I've already told the first four. I'm tired of telling babies what's what.
I mean, next thing you know, it's going to be insisting that you just, like, feed it constantly. It's going to insist that you change its diapers. And, I mean, come on. Are you really want to change another human being's, like, dirty, dirty, soiled underwear?
No, I do not.
So you got to tell that baby what's what, man.
I'll let you know how that goes.
Please do. I'm sure it'll really understand. He will really understand. Not it. I don't know what I'm saying there. Sorry. All right, moving on to the six-pack. We start off with Hitmonkey. No monkey business at common here. A three-fist card. No affiliation. He simply has fast. He fields 1/1/2, and his stats go 2/2, 3/3, and 4/3. So is a fast Hitmonkey good enough for you guys?
Well, since we have nothing else compared to yet, yeah.
Where do you think this card fits in the draft format? I mean, obviously, we like fast. We especially like it if you pair it with Overcrush. Where do you think this guy fits in?
I think mostly if you can get the uncommon. If you need a cheap body, a cheap die to buy, he can fill that role. I don't like the fielding cost, but... You know, in this set, you just kind of have to deal with some of that. So,
I completely agree there. And that is fielding costs are just a little bit higher in Deadpool, I would say. And 1/1/2 for the stats is not a whole lot. I don't know that fast adds enough for me to care a ton about that. I think he's a mid kind of pick, not certainly a first pick material. Moving on, we have the two-mask X-Men affiliated Stepford Cuckoos, Mindy. When fielded, move target character die you control to your prep area. She fields for 0/0/1, and her stats go 1/2, 1/3, and 2/4. I have tried to get them to work just like in my head, pull them out on the table with other stuff in set, thought about how I could use them with Green Arrow Flash and other things like that for the hybrid event today. And I just, in theory, it should work for those dice that you want to cycle when fielded things for. But on paper, there's some layer of cumbersomeness, which is a new word that I just made up right here, that prevents them from doing what I think they should do. What do you guys think of the Cuckoos?
I really don't have a problem with them. I mean, especially with all the back from war. I mean, I don't think there's really a whole lot that's going to win you the game as far as back from war abilities. But if you have one you want to trigger, then, I mean, that's a perfect candidate for something you'll send to your prep area.
You know, I'm doing a search for back from war here, and there are 11 cards. If we're talking draft, two of them are rare, so let's forget that. Four of them only really... Actually, all four uncommons specifically require Deadpool affiliations to do a whole lot. None of them really strike me as something I would seek out. But even just looking for... I want to... You know, just like we intentionally knock our own things out. In this case, you don't have to... You don't knock it out, so you don't trigger any when KO'd abilities, but you get to replace it on the field. So instead of just not having a die anymore, now you have the Stepford Cuckoos out there, which doesn't sound like a bad trade-off. But for whatever reason, getting it to work right just doesn't work. And I think part of the problem is when they come up character and there's nothing on your field that you want to remove, and now you're just stuck with no energy and it has to go through your bag again. So I don't know. Strategically, they have eluded me as to their best purpose. I think Back for More is right, Randy. That's probably why they are this way in this set.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Back for More is useful enough.
I'd still probably take her over Hitmonkey, given the two, just because it is...
Oh, yeah.
It's cheaper to buy, cheaper to field, and it might open up some opportunities later on.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, moving forward, we have a really interesting one. Lockjaw, Fiercely Loyal, the four shield inhuman. While Lockjaw is active, before your opponent's clear and draw step, name a non-sidekick die. If your opponent draws that die, deal 2 damage to all of that opponent's character dice, and each of your Lockjaw dice get +2 attack.
Yep.
It's a pretty nifty card, and one we were certainly anticipating, as the set was being leaked. So, JT, you were quick to respond. Your thoughts?
Well, it's super useful. I mean, you're going to get some board clear, makes your defenders a little bit better removal in terms of, you know, blocking. And I see no reason not to take every last one of these that you can.
I agree with that for sure. And I just see right now the Steelers have one, so they'll be playing the Patriots that you like, despite having no geographic connection to the area, JT. But I like it a lot. I don't know. It's another one that I don't know that I found its best purpose. I like clearing the field, and it has the potential to set up a big turn for you. But in experience playing with this one, and maybe you'll agree, maybe you'll disagree, I feel like he's one that you don't necessarily want to start to get out until maybe the mid-game. I don't think he does as well for you if you have him on the table early, because you can't take advantage of the open field, and then you're giving your opponent a bunch of dice to roll.
It depends. Like, I don't mind having him out, you know, to clear early sidekicks that your opponent tried to thin his bag. Like, yeah, so they can make one big purchase, then all that stuff goes to their bag and has to cycle again. That's not bad. You know, this set doesn't have a Gorilla Grodd.
No, it doesn't.
So I'm not worried about him being able to make a big purchase. Big deal. You're going to buy a Cyclops, or not a Cyclops, but a Colossus that has Back for More or something? Come on, big deal.
Well, see, what I thought you might say is that's why you would want to also try to get the Common Agent Carter.
Well,
so there's little sidekicks you knock out, get tossed in the bag.
You do want to try and get the Common Agent Carter. I'm not worried about my opponent buying a Gorilla Grodd. I'd rather clear those early sidekicks that they tried to thin their bag from.
Fair enough. All right, so we'll sit Lockjaw aside. Next up is Lady Bullseye, a villain. 3-bolt, attack on 2 fronts. When fielded, double all damage dealt to target opposing character die until end of turn. This is a nifty card. I like the ability. I'm really intrigued to see if it ever shows up in Unlimited or Prime. But how about in Draft?
I can see it in Prime, but I don't... I've seen people use it in Draft, but I'm not going to...
Yeah, I mean, I like her stats for the cost, but, I mean, not with Lockjaw sitting there. Lockjaw gives you too much control.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Lockjaw is my pick there. Moving on, we have our second foil. I didn't mention the first, by the way. The first was that foil Hitmonkey that we pulled. Second foil, Deadpool, my set, my rules. One of the best card subtitles we have had yet. Pick it just for that. A 5-fist Deadpool-affiliated character. He has Deadly. Quite simply, that's it. Deadly. He fields 0, 1, 2, and his stats go 2, 4, 4, 4, and 5, 5. I'm liking Deadly the more I play against it. It makes me think about combat a little bit differently than I do in sets or games where it's not present.
While I agree with you, I mean, unless you know that you're going to be able to take advantage of some of the Deadpool-affiliated bonuses, I really don't think you have any business picking this Deadpool.
Certainly not over Lockjaw. No. All right, so let's move on then to Satchel of Unlimited Weaponry. This is subtitled Sword, and it's a 3-bolt non-basic action. You pay 1 life. When you use an action die from your reserve pool that targets 1 or more character dice, the Satchel of Unlimited Weaponry may be immediately used as a copy of that die with new targets. And then it has a burst and double burst. Instead, you may pay 0 life to trigger this effect.
Yeah, no.
I agree with you there. It's too much, too complicated. It requires the purchase of multiple actions in a format where you really just need blockers and bodies. Sandy Brandenburg, the 2-shield secretary and receptionist. She's an ally. That's it. Fields for 0-0-1. Stats go 1-1, 1-2, and 2-2. Not a first pick. That was an easy one.
I mean, cheap bodies are nice, but not when we have Lockjaw there. That's...
Right. Yeah, you know, and there's nothing wrong with not being a first pick at all. I certainly don't mean that. It's just that this is not the stage of the draft where you want to focus on her. You know, by the time you start to get to third, fourth time around, you're going to start to look for those inexpensive, early buy kind of characters that just start to establish a board presence for you. But not now. All right, next up we have the 4-shield villain, Madame Hydra, Viper. When Madame Hydra damages an opponent, move target die from that opponent's prep area to their bag. And her stats go she fields for 0-1-1, and her stats go 2-1-3-2 and 4-2.
I can't see a reason to use her. I just can't.
No, I completely agree. I think this is something, to Randy's point earlier, that's supposed to be manipulating back for more, but it's just not a compelling enough ability, even in draft, to make me care about manipulating that.
Yeah, there's...
Plus, she has to damage an opponent.
Yeah, I think there's too many things you would need to go right with this character to take advantage of her ability, and it's definitely not worth it in draft and not worth it in any other valid format right now.
I agree completely. I mean, if you wanted to mess with the prep area, just get the uncommon morphing jar from Yu-Gi-Oh! outside of draft. All right, let's move into uncommon then. We have Domino, Luck Be a Lady, the 3-shield Deadpool-affiliated character. If you have at least 1 Deadpool-affiliated character die in your prep area, Domino may block up to 2 character dice, but this has to be in your prep. Her fielding cost, I keep doing that, goes 0-1-1, then 2-2, 3-2, and 5-2 are her stats.
Pass.
Yeah. Again, an inexpensive character, but not an ability that we're looking for with the first pick. All right. Maybe you'll be interested in this one. I don't know. But it's our next foil. And this is the 5-fist Deadpool-affiliated character. Once again, we have Deadpool. Chimichangas. I think that's how you have to say that. Deadly, of course. And when fielded, deal 2 damage to all players. Now, I don't know if it's really going to unseat Lockjaw, but at least it's a really interesting card that I like in this set.
Yeah, no, not for me.
You don't like it? Or just not better than Lockjaw?
Fine, just not better than Lockjaw. I mean,
certainly not.
Number one, it's a 5 cost, so you got a ramp to get it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And number two, what significant advantage does it give you over your opponent?
Well, I think it puts the game on a clock. If you can, you cycle him a little bit, maybe even with the Stepfords, I don't know. I think it can put the game on a clock. You cycle it a little bit, and now you make it so those... oftentimes in draft, we end up with these big wall versus big wall, and maybe one person has enough for a couple of characters to go over the side. Now, if you've taken damage from this, you know, 3, 4, 5 times, you can be in a better position to take advantage of that. Now, of course, you're doing the damage to yourself as well, but I don't know. I find it interesting. I like that it's when fielded, as opposed to, say, the Rocket Raccoon from Civil War that was when attacks. Just another way to get kind of that damage both players thing out there. I don't know. I've always been intrigued by that, and Rocket Raccoon is a favorite of mine from that Civil War set too, albeit much cheaper.
Yeah, so you did a good job of...
So that's cool.
You did a good job of explaining, you know, how it could be useful, but not how it gives an advantage. And that's the problem with it for me, is that there is no advantage for the player who selects this card.
Well, you control the ability instead of it just, like, happening.
Woohoo.
But... All right, JT not a fan of anything. JT being Mr. Sad man today. Next up, we have of the Satchel of Unlimited Weaponry. We are into the rares, folks. The 5-bullet Chimichanga. Apparently, a Chimichanga is also a weapon. Deal 2 damage to target character die or player for each action die in your field zone.
This is awful.
JT, yeah. I know JT, I think it was JT had some choice words about this card in our Slack chat not that long ago. I could be wrong. Somebody was trying to like justify somewhere its usefulness, and JT was like, no, and let me tell you everything that's wrong with it ever. Was that you? I'm pretty sure it was you.
It probably was. I don't remember. I don't recall exactly what I would have said.
He's gone on tangents, you know, just tearing so many things apart, he just can't keep them straight.
Yeah. Yep, it's true. It's true. Sorry.
Well, that's fair. I think it's a neat card, and it's one of those cards that gets you thinking about possibilities. But how many... If you have that many action dice out, even if you have like an action die like, let's step out of draft and say Cold Gun, well, that's fine. It can at least do damage or stop something. But then you have to re-roll it right away. Whereas if it was a blocker, no action die is ever going to be a substitute for a blocker is really what I want to say with that. So even if you had like the best action dice out there that had removal and stuff, it doesn't change the fact that you have spent them. And so they're going to used instead of a blocker, which even if it dies, it goes right to prep. I just, it's intriguing, but completely impractical.
I mean, I think this needs to be deal 4, maybe even 5 damage to character die or player for each action die in your field zone to even get me thinking about building around it. But that's in unlimited. That's not even in draft.
Yeah. There's just not enough actions in this to make me care. Yeah. And they don't do enough to other players. You just can't have everything tied up in action dice. You just can't. All right, finally, we have the our last rare, and it's also a foil rare, so that's pretty sweet. The 3-shield inhuman Lockjaw, King's Best Friend. While Lockjaw is active, before your clear and draw step, name a non-sidekick die. If you draw that die, gain 1 life, and each of your Lockjaw dice gets +1/+1. Not better than the common.
No, but it's, I mean, in if you didn't get the common, it's not bad.
No.
I think you could build around this one, and it could be awesome. Because, I mean, he's getting the plus one every, you know, when you draw the turn, or yeah, he's getting +1/+1 on your turn as opposed to your getting a buff on your opponent's turn. So you can control how the bonus is used. You can trigger it later in the turn. There was a WizKids ruling. We know that we could use, you know, the Resurrection Global or something to draw that name die again. So there's some life gain on command. There's some pump on command. I mean, I think as far as one trick pony goes, the common is much better. You can get him out early. You can get him out late. He does what he does, and he does it well. But I'd be tempted to use the rare just because it's something that I could have more control over.
Yeah, and I will say that life gain is certainly more impactful in draft than it is in any constructed mode that we have really dealt with to this point. The only life gain that has really mattered was, I guess, the Captain America that had the also gain one life as a way of combating vicious struggle.
Yeah.
But beyond that, life gain hasn't mattered a whole lot, but it can in draft. So I hear what you're saying there. But I think it's got to be the common all day, every day, as far as this pack goes.
I do agree.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what's kind of frustrating about this six pack? And
what's that?
Virtually every Deadpool six pack.
Go ahead, JT. Tell me.
No win condition.
No. I completely agree with you there. And sometimes I feel like I'm living in the Twilight Zone because I posted in a discussion group not that long ago, man, Deadpool draft is slow and boring. And people were like, yeah, but you could do this, or you could do this, or you could do this. And they all named things that had to do with uncommon cards or rares. And yeah, they're like, uncommon Phantom X can do this. Yes, he could, but think about opening a gravity feed. There is generally one of each uncommon. So depending on the size of your draft pod, you might not have a single one of that in there. Like if you do pods of four, which is not uncommon, you might not have a single one of that particular uncommon in there. Draft needs to work for all sizes. And it shouldn't be predicated on this person gets that one uncommon and now, or like, you know, there are a couple of uncommons that really just make the difference. So two people have those, so they're just probably going to win the draft.
Yeah, just an observation.
No, it's a good one. It's a good one. I know that despite Deadpool being the most recent draft set, we will likely be avoiding it for the PDC draft championship at our store, just because it's not a compelling enough draft format. It's not that there are bad cards in there. They're really interesting cards. But it's just not that fun to draft.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before since Deadpool's release. None of us are really thrilled with the games we've played drafting it. They tend to be, you know, slower, more sluggish games, just both teams mm-hmm. walling up. And I mean, Deadly can help get rid of some of those walls, but it doesn't really let you do any damage. You get to knock out some characters, and then, you know, it's hard to benefit from that in this set.
All right, then. Now, with that out of the way, and five more things for our giveaway set on our stack. That's cool. Five. Usually we've been averaging like three from a six pack. We had almost something. We averaged almost like one thing to give away per pack. That's pretty sweet. With this one here. Let's move into our feature topic today. And with February is going to come the WizKids Open Round 2s. And JT, you thought it would be a good idea, and of course Randy and I were right on board with you once you suggested this, to kind of go back and talk about some tournament preparation and look a little bit at where we are right now with the game. So JT, I would say take it away.
Yeah, well, you know, just kind of thinking as people are ramping up their play testing, and we just thought we might talk through some of that. So, like, I don't know that we have any tips for people, really. Just I think we just talk through, you know, what we would do, what we are doing. You know, I think both Randy and I plan on being in Detroit February 2nd, and so we're just kind of talk through that. So I on our notes, you know, I just jotted down, you know, team building, play testing, and then some of the new stuff. So that kind of tells people where we're going. Kit's out of the bag. So when it comes to team building, we'll just start with style and preferences there. So, for me, I definitely want to play something that's, I don't want to play something that's aggressive. The last WKO, I took the, I've taken to calling Beholder Imprisoned, the front line advanced apologies in advance. So advanced AIA, and that's certainly on the table this time around too. Just from a style aspect, that's gratifying for me because it's aggressive. I think every single game I played in Swiss at the last WKO, I won on my fourth turn. So very quick, very aggressive. You know, get out there early. But just from a style aspect, that's where I land.
Yeah, it's a really fun style to play, and certainly one that we've talked about back and forth here amongst the reserve pool folks since, you know, long before it was something that was out there. And we've talked about that before. We don't need to toot our own horn too much with that. It's very fun. I'm certainly looking at that. I'm also looking at some more controlling shells. I'm trying to use some interesting pieces that I like from Green Arrow Flash and Deadpool. And seeing how they can fit in with some of the control pieces that we have right now. But I need to trade for a couple of cards before I can really get to a build that I'm comfortable with. I know what I can lock in on if I don't get anywhere good with this one. But I'm intrigued to see if this is real. So I'm looking more control.
Yeah. I mean, I've been running Mask Ring at every event for about a year now. I'm ready to try something different. I've talked before how sometimes I struggle with being patient. I'm ready to play something right into the impatient wheelhouse. Just something that tries to hit hard, hit fast, hit off, and right out of the gate. And, you know, if I can alter my opponent's buy order and, you know, can maybe put them on tilt, maybe make them second guess their choices based on what I'm running, then that's kind of what I'm going for.
Very cool.
Randy's playing to put his opponent on tilt. So now that he's announced that several weeks in advance in the podcast, if you sit down across from Randy, just keep your cool, right? Dave, you mentioned that you're looking for a couple of things to trade. And that's really the next note that I put down is access to the pieces that you need. Like, you know, whether they're new pieces or old pieces, you know, with a couple weeks lead time, you know, now's really the time to settle in on what you need to build your team, because it may take a week or two or maybe even three to track one of those down, whether that's in the Reddit trades or TRP trades, Facebook, what have you, or if you have to go buy a single. You know, getting that stuff locked in early is the key. But if you land on something that, let's just say, for sake of example, if you land on something that you're not accustomed to playing, so whether Randy is brewing this new thing up or he's landed on something someone else has run in the past, the key to being able to take it to whatever success your roles will allow is learning to play it. And we've talked about this a ton. But whether you, you know, simply copy someone's build or you, you know, net learn, as we like to say, the key is really play testing. So, Dave, with yours, you mentioned you got two options. One's more controlling. One's a backup. What are the keys for you in knowing your team?
So the first thing that I do, and you can do this by yourself, is the great place to start, because you don't need to worry about taking up anybody else's time or whatever else, but sit down with a notepad and just start rolling through your team and like focus on some different kinds of roles on those opening turns. Okay, if I did this, how would I buy in this situation? Like, understand what's going to come up and what you want to purchase or how you want to purchase. And you might discover that some aspects of your build don't allow you enough flexibility in the opening turns to set up the late game reliably. So that's an important part of developing your team and learning through it. You need to know what those possibilities are going to be. So that's the first thing that's incredibly important, and it's where I always start. And then, you know, you want to playtest with people, but you can also playtest with yourself. Set up something on the other side of the table that you think you're going to face, and just kind of have an honest go of running those two teams into one another. And that's a good way to go as well before you take it to another person. But realistically, it's understanding the ins and outs of all the possibilities of how you can purchase, when you can purchase. You know, when do you want to feel that sidekick and blue eyes it versus re-roll it, et cetera. Just so many different combinations of dice, especially as you get into rolling a whole bunch of them, that you need to know what your team is, what your team can deliver to you. And so you need to understand the roles. I mean, I'll tell you what before we did Nationals 2015, I think like 75 to 90% of the preparation that I did when we were looking at the version of High Hopes that Brandy and I both ended up using during that tournament was rolling through turns and understanding them. Like, just how critical those early turns were in setting up everything that we wanted to do later. We talk about randomness in Dice Masters a lot, and there is, because there are dice. But the funny thing about randomness in games like this is that when you're rolling piles of dice, randomness tends to be mitigated quite a bit more. So early in the game, when you're only rolling three or four dice, the variance is going to affect you a lot more. And so those are the turns that are especially critical to your setup.
Yeah. Yeah, and right, the key there is just to know what can happen and know what to do with it when it happens. Yeah. I've talked about, you know, choosing what to reroll before, and like the question I ask myself is, how does this get worse? Because what you have, you have. It's a known quantity. When you roll, it's not a known quantity. And rerolling four fists on a mask ring team is almost always the right option. But rerolling, you know, a couple shields into fists can really be frustrating if Rip Hunter's on the board and you also have a bard to buy, right? So, just know what your possibilities are, what to do with it, and ask yourself, how does this get worse? So, Randy, you know, you talked about running something different. I'll pitch this question to you, and I'd like you to answer kind of both sides of the coin. When we talk about knowing key matchups for your team, what are ways that you can plan ahead and be ready, and what are ways that you can mitigate seeing something unexpected?
Planning, being ready. I think the biggest thing is see what's been successful recently. You know, we can look probably up to, you know, maybe Worlds this past year and seeing, you know, what teams were good there, what teams did well at this first batch of WKOs, and chances are you're going to see a lot of those team builds, or at least a lot of those win conditions. I think that's what you need to build to prepare for. If it's not a way to, you know, to stop those win conditions, because they're good win conditions for a reason, they're hard to stop, maybe at least something that, you know, isn't going to be stopped by them. If you know, character X is going to give me trouble, but no one has been using it, on a top level competitive team for the past 6 months, it's probably a safe bet that, you might not see it. One example is, the common Storm from Uncanny X-Men. I remember hearing from some players once that, man, that character would just wreck them if they saw that in a tournament. But, no one runs that character. So you're allowed to, take a gamble and just say, well, this is a common card, the rarity of it's common, but no one else plays it, so I'm not going to have to game plan for it. Knowing matchups, I think that's where myself and probably a lot of other people start the whole team building process. I know what kinds of teams I'm going to be matched up against. What can I do against those? That's kind of where the team building thing starts for me, to be honest. But how you can, kind of adapt on the fly. I don't know.
I put you on the spot.
Yeah.
I put you on the spot.
No, I mean, I think back to a big, Canadian Nationals this past year, and, we ran against that, the Bard Buzzsaw team that, we talked about a lot then, and it's been talked about a lot since, that used the Fabricate to, keep recycling Elf, Thief, and Dwarf Wizard, to, be oppressive and keep, rolling lots of energy on its own and, get the Bard quickly. Playing against that in some early rounds of Swiss, tipped me off real quick that, I gotta get, Scarecrow out there fast, and I gotta get Raven out there to protect him. And, then I'll worry about getting Oracle out there to slow him down. But, that's just stuff you have to be willing to, in some scenarios change your mind, and in other scenarios stick to your guns. Some of these tournaments are such a judgment call on when you have to roll with the punches and when you have to, stand your ground with the strategy you came with.
Randy, if you change your mind, I'm the first in line.
What?
If you need to listen to more ABBA. Maybe you don't. Maybe it's a bad thing to listen to ABBA. I don't really know. But
he's giving you lyrics. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's okay.
I asked that question.
I completely agree with you.
Fair enough.
I asked that question, Randy, because this is the thing that you're so doggone good at, and I think it's probably the thought processes are similar enough that they could be tied together, and one could benefit the other. But you have this thing where you will set 6 cards down for your team and just play and wait to see what you wish you had. You won't fill the whole team out. You just go with the core that you know you need, and then you'll play until you reach a point where you, man, I wish I had this. And I really feel like that process can benefit, evaluating something on the fly and seeing something you're not maybe familiar with. Will you just talk about that process for just a minute and do a better job of explaining it than what I just did?
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, sometimes I'll sit down with a team and just have, 6 characters out and, maybe 12 dice, not that many, and just start playing through and realizing, like, against, maybe if I'm going against the Beholder team that JT ran, I really don't have anything that, that deals with this kind of threat or deals with this character on your team. It would be great if I had Blue Eyes so that I could maybe get, some of my other stuff a little quicker. And so, I'll throw Blue Eyes on there and see how it feels. Same thing with Professor X. I might try to build without Professor X at first. See, is this fast enough without it? Or can, if it's there, if my opponent brings it, will it be good enough? Or do I need to bring it with this team? And more often than not, I end up deciding, yeah, I need Professor X. But yeah, it's it's not just, you know, what character ability is going to directly affect, you know, what my opponent's win condition is. It's, you know, what can help, what globals am I used to seeing on the board that all of a sudden aren't there that I wish I had. And man, I think a lot of that just comes from all the hours that we've put into playing this game. And we've played games with, like, with so many combinations of cards and abilities and globals on the board that, you know, you can just kind of recall memories like, oh man, I remember when I played, you know, in this draft, I used this, you know, I used this Minotaur that just absolutely wrecked face. And it might be a little slow right now, but you know what? I want to try using that Minotaur again. I think that has a sweet ability. I want to try that again. I mean, kind of going over some of the other notes I wrote down for this podcast is, I mean, don't just assume that something's going to fail. Like, I mean, the Minotaur I just brought up, like, what is it, a 5 cost? And the stats are all right. I think it has, you know, too high a fielding cost, if I remember right. But, like, it gets a buff for opposing sidekicks, and sidekicks can't block. If you can find a way to you know, maybe get that early, I mean, the game is at a great point right now where, you know, if you can take advantage of your opponent having sidekicks out and use that to your advantage, that's golden.
Yeah, and actually, if I could interrupt you for a second there, Randy, you said, don't just assume something's going to fail. That's a trap that I see people fall into a lot of times where they can come up, and this is maybe kind of related to not worrying about planning for things that just are not in the meta at all. A lot of people are really good at coming up with every possible reason why a card that you put in might fail or is wrong, isn't good enough. And you could probably come up with a counter to just about every card in the game and a reason not to use it. But just because you can come up with that reason doesn't mean the reasoning is practical at all.
Right. I've seen this a million times, so I know I'm not singling any one person out by saying this. I've seen people arguing on Facebook or even on our own forums so many times saying, I'm going to use, you know, this and this, and I think it'll work really well. And someone, you know, posts a rebuttal. Well, then, you know, that won't work because this and this will stop it. Well, I'll just bring this to cancel that. And now I'll just bring that to cancel that. And people get into these arguing matches over what they could potentially bring to stop the other team. And that's great if your team's, you know, 50 cards, but you gotta narrow it down to 8 cards and 2 basic actions. I mean, back to what I was saying. Yeah, don't assume something will fail. And especially if you have time to play test, that's the time to fail. Like, try something, you know, off the wall. You know, I know when I run my Mask Ring team, I always try to buy a Polymorph and an Elf Thief in my first 2 turns. Always, always, always. But you know what? If I know I'm going to be sitting there playing a dozen games against JT playtesting, I might buy something different. Just, hey, I want to see how this works. Do not be afraid of losing or failing in these playtest sessions if you have the time to sit down and play with someone. I mean, fine-tuning a strategy to get it, you know, concise, you want to be reliable and consistent, and so you can do it over and over when you need to, is great. But yeah, experiment and fall on your face. It's okay.
So I'll pull back the curtain a little bit on the WKO and running advanced, apologies in advance. We had this idea, we kicked around, we talked to some of the guys from Ottawa who developed Bardsaw, and when I was talking to Kevin, I realized that we're both kind of on the same page with Beholder and the front line. He was initially, I think, trying to use Cloud Kill, and I was initially on board with Imprison, but the piece that I didn't have that he did was using Elf Thief and Blue Eyes as an engine to get there. And so, you know, we kind of put those two ideas together, and we're just talking about it at this point, and started doing a lot of talking with Isaac and Stuart about how to pull this off, what the purchase order needs to be, and what our other tech pieces around it need to be. And I unfortunately, leading up to the WKO series, I was doing a significant amount of travel for work, which is a little bit out of the ordinary for me, and I really did not have any time to play test. And I'm a mental rep guy, so I was doing the mental reps and planning out what to do with bogus rolls and this, that, and the other. And Isaac and Stuart were playtesting a lot, like 3 or 4 nights a week, sometimes, and just playing a lot of games. And I played like 7 games with the team, and then we changed stuff the day of the event. Isaac had tested something the night before that worked out well for him, and we decided to, we're going to go ahead and give it a try. And so I had actually played 0 games with the final deck list, final team list, before the event. But I had done the mental work, and I had talked to those guys about, their experience in playtesting, and we were able to do, some chatting throughout the day a little bit, and follow up on their playtest sessions from the night before. And so I was able to actually really, really benefit from all of the work that that they put in. So even if you're not able to get in the games, or you don't have, like a regular playtest partner, there are options out there. There are ways to get this work and preparation in, maybe that are non-standard or out of the ordinary, but there are ways to do it. In fact, I just started doing some playtesting with a new playtest partner today. One of the guys that I met up in Rochester, their WKO this time around is HeroClix only. He's looking to figure out where else he can go this time around. But, we just played a couple games today, and he hasn't had a chance to be caught up on what's been going on in the meta. And so we just played a couple games. I pulled the Beholder team out and threw it at him a couple times, and he was a little bit taken back at how easy it was to get to a 7 cost, even though he had both Thief and Oracle. So when you don't test, when you don't think about it, when you don't do the preparation work to get things through, you might sit down against someone who's got a 7 cost win condition and go, I've got the pieces to stop that, and then all of a sudden the 7 cost is in the field and doing work. So the play testing thing, I am all for. I think play as many games as you can, play it until you know it inside and out, and then play it against everything until you know those matchups inside and out. But even when you miss an opportunity, or you're out of position to take advantage of those opportunities, like I was this time around, I think there are ways around some of that. So those are our thoughts on playtesting. Anything else to wrap up that section, guys?
I want to point out, don't just worry about other teams, because if you start to worry about other teams, you're going to start to want to safeguard against everything. And we had an episode all about that. You can't do it. You want to start to think about characters and do your threat analysis and what is going to mess with your team the most. And that's where you want to throw those 1 or 2 tech cards in that last 1 or 2 spots that you have on your team. And then also, how is that going to affect your buy order? Oh, well, Oracle really messes up my team in particular. I think I need to find some way to include something that can counter Oracle. Okay, so it's there. So now think, okay, so I'm playing against somebody with Oracle. How do I actually get this thing out? It's not just understanding your perfect buy order. It's also understanding the deviations from it that you need to have in order to pull off your win condition. And also remember, too, there are slight variations on every single deck. I think we saw that for sure at the at the Toledo PDC event. There were Bard teams, but there were Bard teams with Nitro, and there were Bard teams with Sangin, and there were Bard teams with all these other pieces that people put on. So you're not going to be able to predict everything. Don't try. Worry about the biggest threats to your team, and that's where you want to focus your energies. There's you're not going to be able to beat every single team that's out there, because you can't tech against every single thing that's out there. So don't focus on that. Focus on putting your team in the best position possible to run the gauntlet of Swiss and perform in top eight.
Yep. Good points. Mm-hmm. Good points. Well, hey, we'll turn to the last segment here, and we'll look at new stuff, right? So first things first, the first turn rule change that only affected some of the WKOs. Dave, I know you've got some thoughts on this. Go for it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty impactful, and there are actually times that I am choosing to go second, including in events today. And there were some teams that I was getting ready for the previous WKO that I thought maybe performed even a little better going second, despite what some teams can do going first. It doesn't change how great openings like Rip Thief are and things like that. If anything, the first turn rule encourages an opening like Rip Hunter, Global Thief for the first player. But yeah, there are times I'm nonetheless choosing to go second, actually including in events today, because in both games. Now, I know that this isn't going to happen all the time because of some of the things that Deadman requires you to roll. But in both games, thanks to going second as well as the Merlin Global, I was able to first turn purchase Deadman. And that just meant a lot to the games that I played today. And if it hadn't been Deadman, it probably would have been Zatanna. But nonetheless, I think it matters, and I think there's a definite thought process to put into it. And I think you got to know that based on both your team and your opponent's team. And if you're not thinking about that when you sit down and just say, "Oh, I'll go first by reflex," then you're approaching it incorrectly.
Yeah, and I know this impacts builds too, because this is probably the single biggest reason that we included Kobold on that Beholder team. You know, like what if everything goes, you know, to garbage, and you rerolled and rerolled and you got all fists? Like, just having a bailout by some, you know, another energy that we could say, okay, we can do something with this, kind of like a safety blanket almost, you know, feel like Linus walking around. But it made a big difference for us. So I think and that change was made right before the WKO that we went to. So, you know, we had, I think it was announced on Monday, so we had like 5.5-6 days to work with that and figure it out. And I think, I'm very confident that actually that particular change made a difference in at least one of my games, if not more. And I think you got to be willing to evaluate it when you're building your team. Other new stuff, Deadpool, or maybe some continued pieces coming out of Green Arrow and Flash. Any thoughts there, guys?
Multiple, man. A lot of people want it. It's not easy to find right now. Those who have it seem to be asking for a good bit to get it. Whether money or in trades. So that's certainly something to focus on. I think that's not news. I think that's as predicted. A lot of people are talking about Black Bolt Medusa, Black Bolt Rare Medusa. I think that's going to be interesting in Prime, but you have to tie a win condition to it. And so far, I have not seen that. I think it's good. I think Black Bolt Rare plus Deadly stuff is good. For what it does, but it lacks the next few words. How do you win? What does it do for you? It takes care of blockers, but how do you win from that? I think we'll see somebody give it a go in Prime, but most of the ways that I can come up with to make it truly a win condition require you to do too much at the same time. Like, you need like Black Bolt and at least one other thing to come up character or action on the exact same turn. And especially in a Prime format, that's probably not going to be quite as easy to do. You know, we're talking a place that will be where you're not just rolling every die you own every single turn. You can't ever think that's going to be a possibility. You have to think about that bag curation very differently. So I think that's going to be difficult to really manage. But it is interesting, and I do thoroughly enjoy Black Bolt Rare, and you can find an article on the reserve pool about that. I think it's possibly one of the best designed Dice Masters cards that we've seen. Not the best card ever, but the best designed card.
I think we should look at Doctor Strange as well. You didn't mention that. Green Arrow Flash, Deadpool.
Dormammu.
I mean, Dormammu, there's the Scarlet Witch that lets you put action dice that you use over into your prep area. Very similar to Baron Zemo that came out before, but she has some cheaper fielding costs than he did. Wong, I mean, some of his abilities are pretty useful. The mindless ones are great stats for the price, but I know there's some negative effects to those as well. I think there's actually a few things hidden in the Doctor Strange pack that are definitely worth taking another look at.
Mm-hmm.
What about looking forward? You know, some of the WKOs, these will be legal. Some of them they won't. But what about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I think releases on the 8th, and Iron Man War Machine, which I think is the 15th?
I think the impact Ninja Turtles is going to have is when a new player comes to me and says, "What should I get?" I'm going to say, "Get Ninja Turtles and a mess of Green Arrow flashbacks." Just given what's in that set, I think it's, especially basic action wise, I think it's a great place to start. I think you get a small collection of greatest hits of basic actions to this point in there, and that's very useful. I think there are things in there that are good and intriguing. I'm more intrigued about them with Prime. I still need to digest the spoilers a little bit. I've looked at them a few times, but I'm nowhere near just kind of having the recall that I would have on some other Dice Masters cards for Ninja Turtles. But I believe it's Metalhead that a lot of people are talking about, are they not?
I don't recall specifically what it would be, and I don't have the spoilers pulled up in front of me, but there's a couple of those Tillies that are worthwhile. Whether or not someone builds something around them, or you know, gets the opportunity to play test enough in advance to bring a team that no one's expecting, and then do like Randy, put your opponent on tilt. That's yet to be seen, but I that's worth at least considering if your WKO is after those sets become legal. It's worth at least considering what some of those cards could do to help you, or what some of those cards could do to be a threat. And I personally, I don't think someone will be able to build around Suit Up fast enough. But if you saw it, be prepared and know how that works, and know that, you know, that's an engine that kind of fuels itself for a couple of those, right? You can buy something into the field at level 2 and prep a die, and there's certainly ways to make those things work and generate some ramp without using globals, without using action dice, and just build an engine. So, and then last thing I had on our list here, guys, any speculation on rotation and between which WKO weekends that'll occur?
Well, I would like to think that they would see how just the negative response they got from changing competitive rules within, you know, a few WizKid Open events, you know, just weeks apart. I'd like to think that maybe, you know, after the third WKO, or maybe even after Worlds, go ahead and rotate out everything up to Justice League or Age of Ultron, somewhere right around there.
I'm okay with doing it before the before this competitive season is done. I'm okay with doing it. I would say after WKO2, at minimum. I think it's very telling. You brought up the first turn advantage rule and the timing of that. Consider how badly just about every Dice Masters player under the sun, especially competitive ones, wanted that first turn advantage rule, you know, wanted something done. And then the amount of backlash just because of the poor timing of when they implemented it. Like if you're giving people everything that they want, but you're doing it at a really stupid time. I think the fact of how badly people wanted it, you know, versus the response just because of their poor timing, should be indicative to them how to do this in the future. I hope. But I would be looking for that time. That's what I'd like it to be. And I would imagine we will see Avengers versus X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, Yu-Gi-Oh! And the first D&D come out. We may also see Justice League. I don't know that it will go further than those five sets.
Yeah. I'm thinking
most of the first year.
I think that's about where they would draw a line. You know, and who knows? I do think it's interesting to me that when they announced the Relentless and Swords of Revealing Light ban, they said, hey, guys, we're going to ban this stuff effective about a month from now. Right? And everyone was kind of like, what? And then as we kind of worked through it and had time to process that, I think most of the community said, yeah, you know what, this is a good thing. There was
especially giving like advance notice like that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, certainly, I know there were some folks who were like, all right, well, we're going to ban it right away for our stores. And I totally get that. I totally do. I am all like, you do what's healthy for your store, right? Like, you know your local scene. Do what's healthy for it. You know, probably cultivate a ban list that's ongoing and gets updated as you go. But this change came out, and you know, there's rumor that the Facebook or not the Facebook, but the WizKids initial announcement said, you know, something like December 15th, and then was edited. I never saw it say December 15th, so I'm alleging that based on what I've heard. It's impossible for me to say anything definitive. But again, the point here is like, I think providing lead notice is something that we're hopeful for. At this point, I wouldn't be disappointed if they announced like tomorrow, hey, by the way, we're rotating for this WKO2. That's at least, you know, like, well, it's almost 4 weeks notice, right? So I'm okay with that. But anything after tomorrow, I'm going to be a little bit frustrated with because, you know, people have been developing, they've been testing, they've been working on this, and anything really short of a month is just not, it's not fair. It's, you know, it makes the window too tight, and I think we've learned that, so. Well, cool. That's, is that our list? Is that all the things we want to talk about?
It does. Yeah,
One more. I forgot this. Make sure if you don't know about how something interacts that you ask in advance, find out who the TO is for your location and ask those questions directly in advance. There's some opportunity to do that on Facebook. You know, hopefully we have clued in and keyed in as many of the TOs as possible and on the forums at TRP. But make sure that you take the time to ask that question in advance so that you don't get surprised on the day of the event.
Excellent, excellent advice. And with that, we thank you for listening. We know that you can spend your time in many different ways, and we're very thankful that you choose to spend it with us. If you like what we're doing, please leave us a review wherever you find fine podcasts. It helps us get the word out. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network. Theme music is courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration is given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcasts, The Reserve Pool every Thursday and The Prep Area, running opposite Tuesdays from us. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and until then, keep rolling.
Cheers.
Bye. I have exactly 6% battery life left on my computer.
Nice.
Wow. We timed that well.
I did. Well, I could tell when we were about halfway through. I'm like, I think I'll be fine.
Let me say this. I know we like to do the post show. Please stop and save your file immediately, or I will drive to Akron and punch you.
Why?
Because you lost the file.
But I didn't lose the file. It's right here.
Is it saved?
Well, no, it's still recording.
That's, yeah, if you don't, if your computer shuts off,
this is
the
post show.
I've got like 12 minutes.
Dude,
got plenty of time.
Stop now and save the file.
But Dave,
I'm driving over there.
Dave's getting in his car right now.
I'm off tomorrow. I can do this. 12, I will get you.
12:21 a.m. Dave gets in the car.
All right, hitting stop.
Not the weirdest thing I've done.